Nehemiah chapter 11, hopefully you're there. We covered the first part of Nehemiah 11 a couple of weeks ago. And tonight we're going to return and finish up this chapter. And the last time, if you remember, that we were in this particular book and in this chapter, we saw that there was a real commitment by God's people to remain in the city of Jerusalem. If you recall, the temple had already been rebuilt by Ezra. And then we have the walls of the city of Jerusalem rebuilt by Nehemiah through his leadership. And now the people were committed to rebuild the city on the inside. And they did this by even leaving their homes and their communities outside of Jerusalem. And they were willing to move there even though things inside Jerusalem were not very pleasant. It was a broad wasteland. There weren't very many buildings, not too many homes. It was practically destroyed. But God was going to use their willingness to go and to leave all that they knew behind outside of Jerusalem to come into Jerusalem. If you remember, there were so many people that wanted to live there, there was a reverse draft. And so they were able to pick the ones that were going to stay in Jerusalem. But not everyone could move to Jerusalem. Otherwise, that would leave the outlying areas vulnerable to attacks. So of those people that wanted to participate in God's work inside Jerusalem and were unable to do so, I would imagine that some of them would have been disappointed. Perhaps they felt like they were unable to contribute to what God was doing inside the city of Jerusalem. But as we're going to see here tonight in our passages, is that the Lord had a place for everyone. The Lord had a place for those inside Jerusalem to serve. But then God also had a place for those outside of Jerusalem to continue to serve God where He placed them. There were other responsibilities, and there were other areas inside Judah and inside the tribe of Benjamin that also needed to be tended to. And so it didn't matter where they lived. It didn't matter really even what they did. All had the opportunity to serve God. And I like how Matthew Henry, who wrote a commentary on the book of Nehemiah, put it. He says, "Let there be no strife, no envy, no contempt, no ill will between the inhabitants of the city and those of the villages, because both are needful, both are useful, and neither can be spared." And so we see this principle going on in the New Testament where God collects different people with diverse backgrounds and diverse gifts into His church. And some of the gifts are more prominent, more visible. Others are more hidden, more secret. And some people might say, "Well, I can't contribute the way this person contributes, or I don't have the gift that this person has." And yet, again, from the Old Testament, even into the New Testament, God says, "I have a purpose for both, and both of them have great value." So there doesn't need to be any strife. There doesn't need to be envy or contempt or ill will between those who have visible ministries or those who have hidden ministries. Both are needful, both are useful, and neither can be spared. But even still, sometimes we, like perhaps some of those in Nehemiah's time, and feel disappointed because we're not where the great activity is going on. We don't have the same skills. Sometimes we're disappointed where God placed us. You know, we think, well, we're in a rural community, a rural church. We're in a small church. Sometimes it seems like we have a very limited ministry, but the fact is God has a purpose and a plan for each one of us, just like He had a purpose and a plan for the people of Israel, for those who were in Jerusalem doing that great work, but even for those people that were outside of Jerusalem, still serving God and doing a great work. The lesson that we need to learn tonight is the same lesson that they needed to learn in Nehemiah 11. And the lesson is also found in the New Testament. Paul was teaching Timothy in 1 Timothy 6:6, and this is our theme for tonight, "But godliness with contentment is great gain." Godliness with contentment is great gain. Wherever we are, whatever God has called us to do, we are to remain godly. We are to grow in our love for the Lord. It doesn't matter where we're at. You could be in a large church, a small church. You could be in a small community or large community. We are all to commit ourselves to loving God more, to learning more about Him through His Word, to learn more about the gospel that He's given to us. And then we are also to live out for Him what we've learned. This is growing in godliness. This is what we're all called to do. This is who we're all called to be, godly individuals. But also, as Paul was teaching Timothy and the lesson that these believers were learning in Nehemiah, wherever we are also to remain content. It's godliness with contentment that is great gain. Now, this is one of our greatest enemies, discontent. Now, sometimes we are content with things in our spiritual life. And really, that's not what it's talking about. It doesn't mean that we're to be content with our spiritual walk. We need to desire to grow in our character and in our love for God and in our conduct and our actions for God. We aren't to be apathetic. We are to continue to grow. But what it's talking about is to pursue after godliness while remaining content and happy with the place that God has put us and with the gifts and abilities that God has given us. So that means that we are to be content with the placement that God has put us, where He's placed us to serve and to worship and to grow. We need to be content with the position that God has given us, whatever that may be. We are to be content with what God has provided for us in order to serve, but also we're to be content with the fact that God is present with us no matter where He has put us or what He has called us to do. And we're going to see an example of this kind of godliness with contentment in each of those four areas in our passage. We're going to first start off in verse 20, where we find that the children of Israel, after going through that time of captivity, being brought back to Israel, Jerusalem, there was a godliness with contentment toward their placement by God. And the question that we need to consider tonight is, are we experiencing godliness, pursuing after godliness, but with a contented heart with the place that God has put us, with our placement by God? I believe as we look through this passage, we're going to see men and women that were pursuing after godliness right where God put them. Even though they may have wanted to be in Jerusalem, God had another place and another purpose for them. And they knew that they could pursue after godliness wherever God put them. Look at verse 20. They were committed to godliness with contentment with their placement by God. It says, and the residue of Israel. Now, the residue is talking about the people that were not in Jerusalem. In other words, the residue of the people that were scattered throughout the land of Judah and Benjamin, different cities and different villages and different towns, the residue of Israel and of the priests and of the Levites were in all the cities of Judah, every one in his own inheritance. But the Nephonims dwelt in Ophel, and Zihah and Gispa were over the Nephonims. So even though they were unable to help and to serve God there in Jerusalem, which was the center of worship, it was the center of commerce, it was the place to be for God's people, and though they may have been disappointed that they weren't chosen to go and serve God in Jerusalem, yet they were committed to pursuing after godliness with contentment wherever God wanted them to be, because they understood that God had something different for them. It wasn't inferior than those that were in Jerusalem, but it was different. And so it is for us. God has a special purpose and a special place for each one of you. And we need to pursue after godliness with contentment where God has placed us. There may be something different in our position and our placement than others, but we need to recognize that it's not inferior, it's just a difference. We see some differences here in these verses. They had a different role. It says that they were the residue of Israel and the priests and the Levites. Now, not only were those roles important inside Jerusalem, but they also were important outside of Jerusalem. Yes, there were some of the people of Israel that were needed in Jerusalem. In fact, they tithed their people. 1 out of 10 went back to Jerusalem to live there and to serve and to rebuild the city. They needed to be there, but most of the people were not in Jerusalem. Most of the people remained outside Jerusalem because there were things that needed to be tended to outside as well. These people, the residue of Israel, symbolized those that would work every single day to keep things moving in the country. The worker bees, if you will. And this is something that we as a church need isn't it? We need people to be willing workers, just like the children of Israel. Yes, there is times and places where we come here to work, but also we need to recognize that there's opportunities everywhere we are that God has put us to serve and to work. Wherever you work, that is a place for you to serve for the glory of God. Some of you are at the Riley Days working. What an opportunity for you to have a testimony for the Lord Jesus Christ right there where God placed you. Yes, God has put us here as well, but everywhere that God puts us is a place of service. It may be different than others, but it's just as needed. We also see in this verse that some of the priests were needed in Jerusalem. Obviously, that's where the temple was. And it was the priests that had the responsibility of the sacrifices and of going through the ceremonies there in Jerusalem. But not all of the priests were in Jerusalem. In fact, probably most of those priests were outside of Jerusalem. It says again, the residue of Israel and the priests were in all the cities of Judah. So these priests were those who symbolized the importance of worshiping God wherever you are. Yes, there were priests in Jerusalem where the temple was. But you know, they needed priests to encourage the people to continue to worship even outside Jerusalem. Worship wasn't just taking place at the temple. Worship was taking place at the home. It was taking place in the field. It was taking place wherever they would find themselves as they responded to what God was doing in their life. And then we also see that the Levites, yes, the Levites were needed in Jerusalem. Those Levites were the ones that would help and assist and serve the priests. But they were also the preachers and the teachers of the common people. We already looked at this in Nehemiah chapter 8, where there was a great worship service. And as Nehemiah and Ezra and some of the other leaders were sharing the word of God, what were the Levites doing? They were down there among the people, and they were helping the people understand what was being said from the word of God. And this is one of the roles that and responsibility of the Levites. They too, the residue of the Levites, were in all the cities of Judah in order to help them continue to grow in their walk with God. So we see that even though some of them were needed in Jerusalem, most of them were needed outside of Jerusalem, and they were content where God put them to devote themselves to the Lord in every city of Judah. It was just a different role. Even though the place was different, they were going to serve God no matter where He put them. We also see that sometimes they had a different responsibility. It says that they were in all the cities of Judah, everyone in his inheritance. Now, some translations define inheritance as an ancestral property or something that was passed down generation to generation from their ancestors. But if we look back far enough, where did their ancestors get that property in order to give to their family? All the way down to the people here in Nehemiah. Where did it come from? Was that their land to begin with? No. If you remember, at the very, very beginning, when Abraham was walking through Canaan, it was God who told Abraham, I'm going to promise you this land and give you this land. So ultimately, it wasn't their ancestors' land to begin with. It was God's land, and God gave it to them. So with everything belonging to God anyways, what were they doing? They were just going back to give back to God what He had already given to them. Moses reminded the people of this gift in his Song of Deliverance. If you remember, after Moses brought the children of Israel across the Red Sea, and Pharaoh and his army were crushed by the waves and the water, what happened? Moses praised God through song. And he reminded the children of Israel that the land they were going to didn't belong to them. It belonged to God, and it was God's gift to them. He said this, Exodus 15, 17, Thou, referring to God, Thou shalt bring them in. Bring them in where? Bring them into the country of Canaan. And You will plant them in the mountain of Thine inheritance, in the place, O Lord, which Thou hast made for Thee to dwell in the sanctuary, O Lord, which Thy hands have established. See, the people of Israel realized it wasn't just Jerusalem that belonged to the Lord. It was all the land that belonged to the Lord, and they had a responsibility to give back to God in service wherever He called them to be. So do we. God has a place for us, and everywhere we go, there are opportunities to serve. And we need to keep our eyes open for those opportunities. Wherever you go, wherever God puts you, there are opportunities to serve. And we realize that what we have is not our own, even if it is something that I inherited from other family members. It all belongs to God anyways. And so when I am serving God, where He has placed me, I'm just giving back to Him what belongs to Him, what He deserves. They learn that godliness with contentment is great gain. They also see in verse 21 that some of them were serving where God put them for different reasons. Look at verse 21. Verse 21, it says, the Nethinims dwell in Ophel, and Zihon and Gispa were over the Nethinims. Now, the Nethinims were serving back in Jerusalem. So we've already talked about a group of people that were serving God in other places around Jerusalem. But now we come back to a group of people that were serving God in Jerusalem. Now, who were the Nethinims? The Nethinims were the temple slaves. They were the temple servants. They were the ones that would do the menial tasks. Now, if I was a legitimate Jew and I was serving God somewhere else and I was looking at the Nethinims and saying, hey, I wanted to serve God in Jerusalem. How did they get to serve in Jerusalem? Why are they in Jerusalem doing these tasks when I could be there? In fact, that's where my inheritance is. I should be there. I'm one of God's chosen people. Well, there's a little history behind these Nethinims. If you remember when Joshua brought in the children of Israel, a great army, going into Canaan, finally after going across the Jordan, they're going to conquer. But what happened? They first went to Jericho, and God showed His power over the walls of Jericho. They walked around Jericho a whole bunch of times. Then they went over to the next city called Ai. And after they completely destroyed the people of Ai, then people were starting to catch wind of what these Israelites were all about. God told them to go and destroy the inhabitants of the land. His mercy was worn out. He was done with them. And so that's what they were to do. They were to go out and they were supposed to destroy everybody and everything in their path. Well, there were some men in the city of Gibeon. Now, these men were afraid of Joshua's conquest of Canaan. So you remember the story, and you can read about it tonight in Joshua chapter 9. What they did was they faked that they were from a faraway country in order to try to appease Joshua. In fact, they went so far that they wore old clothes. They had ripped up sacks and satchels. In fact, they had canisters that were completely destroyed. It was supposed to contain their wine and their juice. They even had sacks that were ripped up and dry and moldy bread. They did everything they could to try to convince Joshua that they were from a faraway country and they wanted a peace treaty. Well, they got their peace treaty. But what happened? Remember, Joshua found out, didn't he? He wasn't very happy. You know what happened between the Gibeonites and Joshua? Listen to this. Joshua 9:23. Joshua, after finding out about the deceit of the Gibeonites, he says this, "Now therefore you are cursed, and there shall none of you be free from being bondmen, slaves, and hewers of wood, and drawers of water," get this, "for the house of my God." The Gibeonites were enslaved to the children of Israel to serve at God's house. These are the Nethinims that we find up here in Nehemiah chapter 11. These people, hundreds of years later, didn't have a choice where they were going to serve. They were bondmen, they were slaves. They had to do it, and they didn't have a choice as to where they were going to do it. They had to be in Jerusalem, but even though hundreds of years earlier they were deceitful and they became those bondmen by Joshua, even today, at that time, they were content with where God had placed them. By this time, they had become part of that covenant community. They were worshiping the same God that the Jews were worshiping, and they were one of them. But they still had a responsibility to serve God where He placed them. And even though they had no choice, we see a godliness with contentment. Now, this is one of the reasons why in the New Testament we find Paul writing slaves and telling them to be content with where God placed them. Now, how can that be? What about the circumstances that we're in? Well, God says godliness, pursuing after godliness, that is what our main goal and motivation is. Freedom is wonderful. We enjoy freedom. But He says the main thing is pursuing after godliness while being content with where God has placed you. godliness with contentment is great gain. Are we content where God has placed us? Or are we discontent? Always trying to get ourselves into a better position, in a better place, better opportunities to serve. Or are we content with where God has put us and we are putting our energies in pursuing after godliness, which is what God desires? Second thing, is there a godliness with contentment in relationship with our position from God? See, not only did they recognize that their placement was from God, but they knew that even in their positions of authority and service, it also came from God. We see this principle in verse 22. It goes on in chapter 11, verse 22. The overseer also of the Levites at Jerusalem, so now we're picking up on the Levites, was Uzai, the son of Bani, the son of Hashabiah, the son of Mattaniah, the son of Micah. So we find here a man who is a Levite, a man by the name of Uzai, and we see that he had a very important position. But then we also come later on in verse 22 and see some other people that had a very important position. He goes on, of the sons of Asaph, the singers were over the business of the house of God. In verses 21 through 22, we find three specific roles of service. And in these roles of service, they were committed to godliness with contentment, whatever God wanted them to do. So contentment comes wherever God places you and whatever God wants you to do. The first position that we find is a position of great routine. Again, the Nethinims in verse 21, their role was to perform menial tasks that were routine. Remember what Joshua told them they were going to do? You're going to hew wood and get water for the house of God. Can't get much more routine than that. A couple weeks ago, I was able to go to my brother-in-law's house, and he was chopping up wood. He made a wood splitter, and I was able to help him a little bit. I was kind of astonished at how he was able to make that himself. And I was able to help him get some really big pieces of wood chopped. But I cannot think of anything more routine than chopping wood. Just one piece of wood after another, one piece of wood after another. Has to be done, right? But that's what they were doing. A very routine, menial task. But they were content. They knew that their role was important and was very, very useful for the people of God. But then we come to another position. Verse 22, we find the position of great responsibility. And here we meet Uzai. Uzai was the overseer of the Levites at Jerusalem. This doesn't mean that he was just the overseer of the Levites in Jerusalem. He was the overseer of all the Levites, wherever they were in the land of Israel. But his headquarters was there in Jerusalem. He was a man of great responsibility and authority. He oversaw all the service because God had prepared them for that task. In fact, he had a family history of leadership. He had a great family heritage of leaders. He started with his father Bani and goes up through his great-great-grandfather Micah. And yet he was still content to do whatever God wanted him to do. Even though he was in that family line, he had that heritage, he was willing to serve in his role with all his heart. And that's why his name is listed there. A position of great responsibility. A position of great routine. But then we also see a position of great resourcefulness. Also in verse 22, we find the sons of Asaph. Who are the sons of Asaph? The sons of Asaph were the music leaders for the temple. They had a very important role as well. These sons of Asaph were related to the great musician whose name was Asaph, who lived during the time of King David. If you remember, King David was a wonderful musician. He loved to sing, he loved to compose psalms, but there was a chief musician during that time as well, and his name was Asaph. And David appointed Asaph to be the head over the music responsibilities there in the temple. Well, hundreds of years down the road now, here we find the sons of Asaph who were also singers. Now, singing in the temple was a very creative, but also a very visible job. It was something that people would see and people would hear. But look at the other responsibility that they were given. It's not just talking about their responsibility to sing. It's talking about another responsibility. Look at it. Of the sons of Asaph, the singers, they were over the business of the house of God. Now, over and above even their responsibility to sing, they were given another responsibility. As Matthew Henry puts it, they were appointed to look after the necessary repairs of the temple. So imagine these singers, that's all they were doing before. Now they were given a responsibility to be handymen. They had to go around the temple. They had to go around the complex. And if they saw a leaky faucet, they had to go fix it. If there was a roof that needed to be replaced, they would have to go fix it. If there was a block that needed repair, they would have to go fix it. Now, you would think that someone that had such a highly visible job of singing glorious songs and conducting and composing music for the glory of God would think, well, that's kind of a demotion. Now I've got to go and I've got to get my hands dirty and I've got to work here at this building and I've got to sweep floors and I've got to mend fences and I've got to do all these things. But no. They experienced godliness with great contentment. They were willing to be flexible, whatever God wanted them to do. It didn't matter that they had such a high, visible position of being a leader in singing. But if a toilet needed plunging, they were going to go do it. Because God had a place for them and a job for them, and they were willing to do it. Now, they could have considered that to be a demotion, but they were flexible and they were content. Their service was not about them. It was about the Lord. They understood that godliness with contentment is great gain. Are we content with what God gives for us to do in service for Him? It shouldn't matter what it is. It should matter that we are pursuing after godliness, and whatever God puts in our path, we'll do. We'll do it with all our heart. Whatsoever you do, do it heartily as unto the Lord. That may be something that is not prominent. It may be something hidden. It may be something that no one else ever knows about. But God does. God sees and God knows. And God knew the hearts of these sons of Asaph who would rather be singing their hearts out to the Lord. And yet, they were up there on the roof making repairs. Because that was what God had for them. That is real godliness with contentment. The third thing that we see where there was godliness with contentment was in their provision from God. And we need to make sure that we're also content with how God provides for us. Look at verse 23. It says, "For it was the king's commandment concerning them." Concerning who? Concerning the sons of Asaph, the singers. So the king was looking out for these guys. He knew that they had a lot on their plate. They had to conduct music, and then they also had to do the repairs on the temple. So the king's commandment concerning them was this, that a certain portion should be for the singers. This is a certain portion of money due for every day. Then we find that Pethahiah, the son of Meshezabel, of the children of Zerah, the son of Judah, was at the king's hand in all matters concerning the people. We know that God promises to provide the daily bread for His people. He promises that, but He doesn't always tell us how He's going to provide for our needs, does He? He doesn't always tell us how. The people needed to be content with however God would provide for them. And sometimes it requires great humility when we see who God is going to use to provide for us, doesn't it? And I would imagine that the people of Israel were learning great humility when they realized that God was providing for them through a heathen king, one of their captors, the king of Persia, thousands of miles away. But when God does provide for our needs, He does it in a great way. It will be a powerful provision. It says in verse 23, it was the king's commandment to provide for the sons of Asaph, these singers who had to multitask and also do work on the temple. Now, which king is this talking about? Obviously, Jerusalem didn't have a king at this time. So it's not talking about a Jewish king. Most likely, this is Artaxerxes, the king of Persia, the one that Nehemiah was the cupbearer for. And Nehemiah went to Artaxerxes and said, "Can I go back to Jerusalem?" And so with Nehemiah going back there, and Nehemiah was a favored servant in the king's palace. And Artaxerxes turned that favor not only to Nehemiah, but on the entire people of Israel. The Lord worked through Nehemiah in such a way that even the pagan king of Persia took an interest in the welfare of the people of Jerusalem, 1,000 miles away. Now that can only happen from God. God is powerfully providing through a heathen king. It reminds us of Proverbs 21:1. It's on your message guide. This says, "The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. And as the rivers of water, He turns it whithersoever He will." God used King Artaxerxes to provide for the rebuilding of Jerusalem. Amazing! That is how God provides for His people. And it takes great humility for us to sometimes see who God's going to use to provide for our needs. But that's where godliness with contentment comes in. That's where we realize, swallow our pride, say, God, You promised to provide. You didn't tell me how You're going to provide, but whatever You do, and however You do provide, I'm going to be content with what You give me. It was a powerful provision because it was by the king's commandment, but also it's a practical provision. A practical provision. The king required, here in verse 23, that a certain portion of money or of food or provision be given to the singers for their work. Now, as singers and as handymen around the temple, they were due something every single day. They literally had to wait for their daily bread. They may not have expected it every single day, but it was there every single day. God did take care of them. God did provide for them, and they were content. Godliness with contentment is great gain, especially when we realize that God will provide for our needs. Remember what Jesus said in Matthew 6:31? He said, "Don't take any thought, saying, what are we going to eat? What are we going to drink? How are we going to be clothed? But seek you first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you." Jesus even said that when it comes to His provision, however He provides, you need to be content with it and pursue after godliness, just like these people in Israel. But then we also see that God's provision went further. In verse 24, we see that it was also a providential provision. It was providential. See, it wasn't just for the singers. God didn't just provide for them. He didn't just have a favorite few. God doesn't play favorites. Do you know that? God doesn't play favorites. He doesn't play favorites with a big church compared to a small church. He doesn't play favorites with believers in America compared to believers in China. He doesn't play favorites. He providentially provides for all His people. And in verse 24, we see this. Because at the king's hand in all matters concerning the people, God had put someone. And that someone was by the name of Pethahiah. Pethahiah had the king's ear in all matters concerning the people of Israel. Isn't God's provision amazing? When Nehemiah left, you would think there was a vacuum. But God filled the vacuum and put Pethahiah there in order to be able to share the needs of the people of God in Jerusalem to the king of Persia who would meet their needs. And because the people of God knew and experienced God's provision more than anything else, they wanted to be godly with great contentment. They knew that everything that they had belonged to the Lord. Therefore, everything had to be used for the Lord. Then we come to the fourth thing that we see that they were content with. This is from verse 25 through the end of the chapter. Most of this passage is actually dealing with different names of cities. But we find that they were also content with the presence of God. I believe we see in these verses a principle that God was there with them and for them, no matter where it was. The rest of this chapter is a detailed list of the cities and villages and other settlements where God's people would go to serve. This would be their homes. This would be where they would go out and serve God. And they learned that wherever they were to pursue after godliness with contentment. Because wherever they were, that's where God was. And we see in verses 25 through 30 that the presence of God was with Judah. If they went somewhere in Judah and they settled back in their homeland, they knew that God was there. In fact, let's read some of those verses and learn some of these cities. Some of them are familiar, others are not. Some of these cities archaeologists have uncovered, and some are still mysteriously unknown. It says in verse 25, "And for the villages with their fields, and some of the children of Judah dwelt at Kirjath Arba, and in the villages thereof, and at Dibon, and in the villages thereof, and at Jacobzeel, in the villages thereof, and at Jeshua, and at Molada, and at Beth-Gilet, and at Hazar Shual, and at Beersheba." There's probably a city we're familiar with. "And in the villages thereof, and at Ziklag, and at Mekano, and in the villages thereof, and at Enrimmon, and at Zaria, and at Jarmuth, Zenoa, Adullam, and in their villages, at Lachish, in the fields thereof, at Azekah, and in the villages thereof. And they dwelt from Beersheba, which is the southernmost city in Judah, to the valley of Hinnom, which was the valley just on the south side of Jerusalem. So we find the entire southern section of the land of Canaan was devoted to the people of Judah, and that's where they went. They said, yes, God, we want to be in Jerusalem to serve you, but we're going to go home, and we're going to serve God wherever you put us, because we know you're there. We know you're there with us as well. Here in these verses, verses 25 through 30, we find 17 towns that are mentioned. And the reach of these towns are mentioned in verse 30, as I mentioned, from Beersheba unto the valley of Hinnom. The valley of Hinnom is the northern reach of the tribe of Judah. It's just under Jerusalem. It's that valley right underneath it. And then we have Beersheba on the southern reach. And that area, even though it seems like a large place, and you hear, well, there's 17 cities in this entire area, and it can feel like a large place and a lonely place, you know what? There's only about 40 miles in between those two. They really weren't that far away from each other. They really weren't that far from Jerusalem. They could take a day's walk and go back to Jerusalem and see what's going on there and help out if they needed to. And they could go to the temple and worship God. God's presence was still with them, no matter where they were in Judah. It doesn't matter where we go. It doesn't matter what God has called us to do. God's presence is still with us. And that's why we ought to be pursuing after godliness and be content with His presence. But we also see the presence of God was with Benjamin. Verse 31 through 35, we find 15 towns that are mentioned. It says the children also of Benjamin, verse 31, from Geba dwelt at Michmash and Aijah, or Ai, and Bethel, and in their villages, and at Anathoth, Nob, Ananiah, Hazor, Ramah, Gittaim, Hadid, Zeboim, Nabalot, Lod, Ono, and the Valley of the Craftsmen. So we find even in these cities, there was a region called the Valley of the Craftsmen. God had a special place for certain individuals with certain skills. That doesn't mean that they were far from God's presence. God's presence was with Judah, was with Benjamin. But then we also find in verse 36 that the presence of God was permanent. Look at verse 36, our last verse. It says, and the Levites were divisions in Judah and in Benjamin. What does that mean? There were Levites in both of those tribes. They didn't favor one or the other. They were in Jerusalem, yes, but there were cities in Judah that needed these Levites to help serve them and teach them. And there were others in the northern part of Benjamin that needed them to serve and to teach them. And we see that these Levites were often used by God to preach the word to the people, to teach them the word, and then to serve the people, and shows us that God was going to keep His servants where the people were. God's presence was permanent. God was still with them wherever they went. It didn't matter if they were in Jerusalem. Wherever they were, whatever they did, however God provided for them, God was still with them and His presence was promised. Even though they weren't able to be in Jerusalem, through this, going to one of these cities or one of these villages, they learned that godliness with contentment is great gain. Do we learn this lesson? Have we learned this lesson? Are we pursuing after godliness with contentment in our life? We need to focus on godliness wherever God places us. Wherever it is, whether it's in a church or in a community or in a home, where God has placed you, we need to pursue after godliness with contentment. We need to pursue after godliness whatever God has for us, whatever He wants you to do with your life, or whatever He wants you to do that day. God has a purpose for you. And we need to pursue after godliness even if you're on the roof changing shingles, or even if you're mowing the lawn. Whatever you do, whether therefore you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. We pursue after godliness with contentment every single day in whatever task we do. And we also see that we need to focus on godliness however God provides for us. Sometimes we need to choke down our pride and be humble and recognize that God used someone to provide for my need, and we're thankful, we're grateful, we're humble, and we're content. We're content. Remember watching Little House on the Prairie with my kids, and sometimes Dr. Baker, the only thing that he would get for payment was what? A chicken or some eggs or something like that. And you know what? He was content. Now, he was an actor, but he was still content. So we need to be content, pursuing after godliness, because His presence is always with us. As it says in Hebrews 13:5, be content with such things as ye have. For He hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. This was the lesson the people of Israel were learning. It didn't matter where God put them. It didn't matter what God had for them to do. It didn't matter how God was going to provide for them. They knew that God was with them, and with that knowledge and with that trust, they learned to be content and pursue after godliness. Remember, godliness with contentment is great gain.